Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Yay, we're back to, well, I'm saying we're back together. We're back in the same country.
Jumbo.
Same time zone. How was it? Did you have a lovely time?
Oh, do you know what? It was just so magical. And I think I probably need to start off by saying that I was really aware that there was lots of stuff going on back at home. Loads of people that I know really well had all of their Christmas plans cancelled. Loads of people got COVID. I reckon 8 out of 10 people that I knew got COVID. And I was really aware that all of that was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't help but think about that in terms of just being able to be with my mum and the kids being with her. We had the most incredible trip and I'm so grateful that we managed to get away because it all could have gone tits up. So, yeah, it was a real, I just feel completely refreshed and ready to go. And, You know what, I think I should probably say this now, like you guys know listening that I haven't had the easiest time with my mum.
Yeah.
You know, the relationship has been tricky and I think it was the first trip that we haven't let the past condition are like present. Does that make sense?
That's really good. Well done, Zoe. I know you've done like a lot of work as well to get to that place. So I'm really pleased that
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'd love to say I'm the same as you and feel refreshed, but we had COVID before Christmas. I know.
Did you manage to have a Christmas?
Yes, we did. So luckily that whole 7-day thing came out. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of spoke to our families and said, you know, if we test negative on day 6 and 7, then technically we can still carry on with Christmas. And they were all totally fine about it. Yeah, why not come? But anyway, my dad's actually got it. Who knows where he got it from? But, you know, actually everyone's okay. So, I'm so glad that we managed to have a Christmas as well. But it definitely did take the spark out of the week before Christmas for me because I was just, not really knowing what we were going to do. And I was trying to deliver like a Christmas dinner.
Oh, God.
You know, like pieced together. Oh, look, I can get carrots from the co-op on delivery. I can get this. And
bit of Bisto from the local shop. Yeah, lovely.
Oh, God. Anyway, but it was good. It was good. We had a really nice time. And it's the first year that James has ever been off at Christmas.
Yes.
Like, this is the first year. I mean, now he still plays football, doesn't he, part-time, but his games were all cancelled because all of the team had COVID.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to just be not like, that sounds weird, but just be normal. Like, just have a normal Christmas. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have to get up at the crack of dawn to leave our family so that he could drive to, you know, a meeting point and have a match. We didn't have any of that. He could drink. Like, it was just, it was just so nice.
I'm so pleased, George. And that's kind of what you wanted. You're so stoic. Like, George has kind of got on with her different Christmases for like the last many 15 years or whatever. But actually, like you said, just have a normal Christmas where James is around and he's able to enjoy all of those family things that he's probably missed in the past. And for you as well, to have your partner there.
It was really nice. So, I mean, Gigi learned how to say bollocks. So that
brilliant.
That was a good part of Christmas.
What a great first word. I mean, first swear word.
First swear word, bollocks.
Bollocks.
Oh, in fact, Oh, bollocks is actually her new phrase for 2022. So it's got off to a great start.
GG for Prime Minister. She yeah. carries on this way. What a powerful little diva. The outfits that she's been pulling out as well.
They ask her a question. So, you know, what about the parties that you were having when we were all in lockdown? Oh, bollocks. Anyway.
I'm glad. You know what? It sounds like you guys had a great Christmas, like, obviously, with everything that was going on around us. And I think that's what, you know, this period of COVID has taught us. Yeah, I've been having so many conversations with mates going, look, we just don't know what's around the corner anymore. We don't know what's going to be happening in the future. You know, the last 2 years have been a bit of a blur. So all we've got is today. And I think I took that to Africa with me as well, that yeah. I don't really know when I'm going to see my mum again. I don't know how long she's going to be around for. You know, she had that horrendous dog attack and I was really worried about her. She's such a strong old boot. Like, she healed so well. And she, by the end of the holiday, she was in the sea with us and I was looking.
Oh gosh, yeah, of course.
No, she was amazing.
That was so close to when you went as well, wasn't it? It was only like a few days before.
I know. Oh. And so, you know, it was a really lovely kind of stay in the moment trip and we enjoyed yeah. every second of it. And yeah, it was great. And now I'm just trying to slather myself in moisturizer because, you know, when you come back from holiday and for a day, yeah. people are like, oh, look at your tan. And then they go, oh, you're a bit dry. And like,
oh my God. I don't know if you did this when you was younger, but I used to sit on the plane on the way home because I read somewhere like you lose 40% of your tan on the way home from the holiday.
Good God.
I used to sit there with that Lancaster after sun.
Tan Maximizer.
Tan Maximizer.
Oh, it's the best.
Slathering it all over my body, like throughout the whole flight.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's amazing. Yeah, you and I are the same. We were meant to be, George. Now, listen, let's get into the chat. We actually recorded this yesterday, so it's very, very, very fresh. And the person that we spoke to is one of the kind of rawest and most honest people that I guess we've chatted to, in as much that she doesn't have a filter, which I love, and she just says it how it is. And she's also like really inspirational online. She's got a massive following and she's all into body positivity, real parenting. She shared her IVF journey because she had a really tough time conceiving. And she's just a great spokesperson to kind of the real shit.
Yeah. And do you know what? I really enjoyed this chat. And actually, the first couple of minutes that we were interviewing her, I thought, this is going to be fantastic. And people, you know, people are going to enjoy listening to this lady because, yeah, like you say, she just laid it all out exactly how it was. Just, I mean, I learned a lot from that episode, actually.
Oh, me too. Me too. I learned that you could take a photographer into the, like, the birthing room with you to photograph all your bits. That was an interesting topic, but but also what it looks like. I mean, God, I don't know. I mean, we talked about everything. So
we did.
There's a few references to poos, just to warn you.
There's also some special sucky lube. You might enjoy that part.
Lube,
yeah, you might enjoy that part of the chat.
Yeah, I would just say if you're listening to this around children, maybe have it in your headphones.
Yes.
Who are we chatting to today, George?
Today we are chatting to George Horn, otherwise known as Fuller Figure, Fuller Bust.
This is going to be quite confusing because our guest today has got the same name as our George. So we're going to call George G and we're going to call our guest George. We're very, very, very excited about speaking to this amazing lady today, a professional curvy model known for her open and honest personality and promoting inclusivity within the modelling and kind of digital spaces. She had the best Christmas present of all by giving birth to her little girl around 3 months ago. And she's openly shared her IVF journey online to her something like 350,000 followers who are very much engaged in her whole thing, as are we today. Please welcome to the podcast, Georgina Horn, aka Fuller Figure, Fuller Breasts. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much. What an intro. I was sat there like blushing, like, oh, this is really nice. Really nice.
Can we just say before we start, George is currently with her little girl on her chest, rocking. I feel like I'm going to start rocking during this podcast. Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good.
I think so. It's such a weird question, isn't it? How are you? I think everyone goes to go, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. But really, how has it been? Because we know the first few months of, you know, having a baby can be tough, can be amazing. You know, what have you been going through?
So I've actually made a pact that when people who know me like well enough that I can offload, not just a random woman in the supermarket, ask me how I am, I will tell them I've actually not been like 100% all the time. Like, I'm having the best time being a mum, but that everyone warns you the first few weeks are hard, but until you do it, I just don't think you can grasp the overwhelmingness of basically keeping a human alive. I've been really lucky that I've been able to exclusively breastfeed, but also that has made me feel quite like shackled to her. I've been like, oh my goodness, if even if I fall asleep, like I can't do anything, because if she needs me, I need to be there, and I need to be able to whip it out, put it in her mouth. I need to be able to pick her up. I need to be able to do all these things. There's no, oh, it can wait 5 minutes, it can wait 10 minutes. It's not like feeding the cat who'll just meow at me for a bit longer. Like, this is a tiny, tiny baby who's wanting to chat. You want to have a little chat? And so, like, those first few weeks, especially when my husband went back to work, I was just like, I can't do this. This is so overwhelming. I can't, like, just put her back in me for a bit. Like, I'll be fine. Like, so when people have said to me, how are you? I've been like, I struggled. I really struggled in ways that I didn't think I would. And we ended up hiring a doula, which was an amazing decision. But now it feels like so much better. Like, I don't even recognize the kind of person I became when I just complete, like, one night I just looked at my husband. I was like, I don't know what to do. Please help me. I'm having a panic attack. And he was like, yeah. I don't know what to do. Do we call an ambulance? So yeah, that's a long rambled way.
I don't think you're alone in those comments. I think definitely both George and I went through that as well. How much about being a mum did you know going into parenthood? Had you had experience with little ones before?
So my sister's got two little ones, and actually she and I weren't that close until she had the first one, and then I think it sort of mellowed her out a little bit. So I've actually been really lucky that I've been able to spend a lot of time with them. I used to go and stay a couple of times a month with her to help, because her husband's away quite a lot with work. And I like worked as a nanny. Like, I've always loved being around children.
So quite prepared.
IVF baby. So we literally made sure we were hypnobirthing, we were NCTing, we did everything. And I thought I was so prepared, but there's just still so much you have to, like, it doesn't matter if someone tells you like cluster feeding is hell. You're like, yeah, cluster feeding is, like, you have to live it before you can fully grasp it. So I feel like I was prepared. I feel like I know a lot. I feel like I knew all about like the different pain relief and stuff, but I didn't know how effective snot suckers were until we used one, and like joy of a white noise machine, and like all of that. Like, you have to go there. Like, the feeling of like your uterus contracting back, it's just all these little things.
Yes. No one talks about that, actually, do they? And that's really painful. It can be really painful.
Yeah,
those you things. Just mentioned that your journey to becoming a mum, you know, wasn't straightforward. You know, you went through IVF. Can you just take us back to when you started trying to conceive and when you realized that you would have to have some kind of intervention?
So actually, my husband and I were talking about it yesterday, because I don't know, like, about other people listening and like how, like, you have those people who don't really try, but I guess every woman sort of knows when her fertile window is a little bit, or you've looked into it a little bit, and of course you're going to be like, is my period turning up? Is that implantation bleeding? I call it the deep sea diving, which is quite graphic, but I was like checking my fertile cervical mucus. I was checking my cervix. Like, I was doing everything. We actually sort of didn't try for too long before actually seeing a doctor, but we hadn't used protection in a very long time. Sort of like, yeah, if it happens. And then it was at the beginning of 2019, we actually, 2019, we went to see a doctor, and we kind of got the news that we would probably need intervention, but that took many, many months before we actually conclusively were told, you know, it probably won't happen naturally. Went to see a fertility specialist as well, who was sort of like, yeah, it's really, really not going to happen, but it there was like a tiny chance it could. So we were still like giving it a go. Like, I remember like the worst day with trying to conceive was like, we'd got out our diaries, we planned it for the month, but it coincided with me driving home from Manchester after 2 days of photo shoots. And I was like, Robbie, you have to be ready. The moment I walk in the door, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to lie there and I want it over within 5 minutes. I do not want to have to speak to you. I don't want to have to look at you. You be clean, ready to go. It's my
first time. Do not kiss me on the mouth.
Yeah, don't do anything. I've been driving home from Manchester, so I do not want to exert any energy. And it's just like, takes all of the fun out of shagging when you have to be like, lying there, like putting in the special lube that like pulls up the sperm.
What is
like,
this special lube? I hadn't heard of this before. What is the special lube that sucks up the sperm? I've never heard of it before.
It's meant to emulate your fertile cervical mucus is meant to help sort of keep the sperm hanging around until the egg appears. So it's meant to sort of emulate that. But actually, an orgasm is meant to be what sucks up the sperm. So I was there with like all of the toys cleaned and charged, like which one, like, you know, like a butcher's roll, like rolling out the knives. I was like that, like, let's just bring out the big guns. Like, what's it going to be today, lads? Because within like 15 minutes of the man ejaculating, if a woman has an orgasm, her body, the female orgasm like pulls up the sperm. So you get the lube up, you get that, you get a pillow under the bum, sticking a moon cup up to keep it up. Like, honestly.
But wouldn't it be great if the orgasms happened a bit more frequently?
Yeah.
So like, it's just so much easier, isn't it? Like, maybe that would be the change, you know? It's like, well, yeah, that's one of the things that we need to put to the top of the list. So you were doing all of that. So it was like legs above the head, special sperm.
God.
Right, okay. So how long was that going on for?
So we only started IVF that got me pregnant with her the very end of 2020.
Okay.
And it was called a long protocol. So that was like several weeks of injecting and things. So we were actually trying, I guess, for just shy of 3 years,
before I actually
got pregnant. So
it's a long time.
What
was life like for you during that period? And just tell us about what that does to somebody when, I guess, month after month, you're sort of faced with that.
So it's weird to think of, because when you think of like a year, that's 12 opportunities, which doesn't sound like much. Like when you're trying, it's of course the week of trying and then the 2 week wait and then a week of period. So actually for 3 weeks of the month, you're thinking about it. And during your period, you're getting your diaries out and like planning your scheduled shagging. And then it just felt like every month I got a period, it was just like, okay, we can do this, we can try again. And then there gets to a point where you're like, everyone around me is getting pregnant. Some people are on their second kid. You don't realize until you're in it, like what the sight of like a pregnant woman can do to you and like what sort of other people getting pregnant can sort of feel like. It just hurts. Like it felt like, because you're hyper aware. So every TV show I watched, someone was pregnant, someone was having a baby, someone needed to have an abortion, someone was having a miscarriage. Like there was some kind of aspect to pregnancy. Then we were sort of watching, I don't know, Friends, there's an IVF storyline. Sex in the City, there's an IVF storyline.
Yeah.
Gavin and Stacey, there's an infertility storyline. So you're like, oh my God, it's everywhere. Like we watched Gavin and Stacey for something lighthearted, and then the storyline comes up and Robbie like looked at me and I was like, I forgot this was in here. I'm so sorry. And like, you just get to the point where you become very bitter. You become jealous, upset, obsessed. I didn't recognize who I was and like the really horrible thoughts I had, like the really dark and like upsetting thoughts where I was just like, you can't wait, you can't have another baby, I haven't had one yet, like you just have to hold on, like let me get my one out and then you can crack on with the rest of them. And it just
what do you do to protect yourself, you know, when you're going through something like that? Because I've got friends who have, you know, been trying to conceive while other friends have been pregnant. And, you know, as somebody in the middle, it's like you're trying to protect both friends. You want to be really happy for the friend that's pregnant and might be going on about her pregnancy and everything, but you're equally aware that another friend is trying to conceive and actually that might be really hurting her feelings every time she's talking about it. But equally, you want the friend who's pregnant to be happy. And it's difficult. But I guess when you're, you know, you are the person trying to conceive, how do you go about protecting yourself when it is everywhere, like you say?
Yeah, it's hard. It's also like I had friends who got pregnant who felt so guilty and I didn't want them to feel like that. Like one friend who got pregnant, we started trying it around the same time and it took her just shy of a year, so it wasn't short for her. And she googled how to text me and tell me. She googled and found that actually it's better to text so that I had a space to react, which I cried quite a lot when I found out. And yeah, it's hard. Like, I think we're all different. Like, some people can be really happy and stay positive and everything else. And like, some people, they find the pregnancy the hard bit. Some people find the babies the hard bit. For me, definitely still, I find people getting pregnant hard. I don't know why, but I still am like, oh, you don't know what it's like to inject your stomach at 8 in the evening and have your like eggs retrieved from you. And I still get that like jaded feeling. Although, like, I have got quite a nice, easy baby. She's been a bit grumbly today, so I do feel like we've got a nice payoff there.
I love that you're talking about this, and I want to, and like, thank yeah. you for being so open and honest about it, because I think it's a subject that isn't spoken about. Though actually, you know, we're supposed to put a face on and go, oh, congratulations, and feel yeah. okay, and actually outwardly, you know, kind of present a certain way of how we're feeling. But clearly, for people that are going through struggles to conceive, it is absolute hell. My only experience in this is my sister, who is infertile and can't have children. And I remember the day that I told her that I was pregnant with Luna. And I remember thinking, well, I don't know how to do it. And I don't know what to say. And I know it's going to be devastating. And I can't wait to tell her. But at the same time, it's going to break her heart. She stood up in the restaurant, ran to the loo, burst into tears in the loo, and came out and said, you know, I'm thrilled for you, but this is just devastating for me. And I sort of get it. And I was really, really aware of how she was feeling during my pregnancies, really aware. And Catherine said, my sister said, every time she saw a Facebook announcement of another person getting pregnant, she just sobbed.
Yeah, it's so I still even feel guilty now, because actually within the IVF community, having done two rounds, I'm actually quite lucky. It's the right. biggest gamble of your life when you do IVF, because every day that goes by after you've had your eggs retrieved and hopefully enough quality to fertilize, you are losing embryos, and your embryos maybe aren't good enough quality. So it's the biggest gamble of your life. And the fact that we had two embryo transfers and this one worked, and this one wasn't even graded, so they like grade them, which apparently gives you like a tiny percentage chance better of it sticking, a better chance of if they freeze it and defrost it, it'll be fine. We called this one Wonky because she didn't even make the perfect, beautiful, rounded blastocyst that she should have been. She was just all not good quality. So we were like, oh, fine, this one's not going to work either. And then I felt her implant, like I felt this pinching feeling inside. It was insane. Like, you're hyper aware, I think, when you're trying to conceive of everything anyway. So I've been very like tuned into my like ovaries for a long time, but like the like few days after I had the transfer, I felt this feeling. I did a test a few days later, it was positive, and then she just carried on sticking around. Wow. So
amazing.
Yeah, it's so hard. I can't imagine what it's like to be on the other side of the coin and to have conceived easily and to be around people, because obviously yes, your struggle isn't as hard, but in a way you not being able to share that joy as freely as you'd like to with your sister is also hard for you, because you're also grieving for your sister. You're also yeah. grieving yeah. the happiness yeah. that you could share. Like, the whole thing is shocking.
What's the right thing to do, though? It's really hard to know what the right thing to do. And I think people listening to this will be asking the same question, because it's either them in the position who can't, you know, they can't conceive, or they've got somebody close to them who can't.
Yeah.
So how are you supposed to even start tackling that? Do you talk? Is it communication? Is it saying nothing? Is it hiding from them? What is the answer, do you think?
So I guess everyone's different, but like the way my friend actually Googled and Google recommended a text, I think that is so right. Like, I think the worst thing you could, not that you did the worst thing, because you wouldn't know, you were chatting with yeah. your sister. But for me personally, it would have been hard to react in front of someone and smile and be like, oh, okay, but that was just me.
I guess as well, because sending a text when you're sharing some big news or some important news, we're always told that, you know, you don't send that in a message, you know, you phone someone or you speak to them. So it's quite, yes. I guess it's not natural for people to just put something so big in a text message. But I get it that it gives you the space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so for me, I'm not very good with really positive. You'll be fine. You will be a mum one day. It will only take one. Even if you're not a mum, you can adopt, you can do this. Like, I found that quite hard. I needed friends to take it as they found me and just listen. Like, some of my friends actually looked into IVF and what it all was and sort of like what all the medication meant and how long everything took and like what it would be like for me. Friends offered to do things to distract me. Let's go on walks or whatever. Like, let's do things that you can't do when you're pregnant. So, I mean, obviously bungee jumping would have been great, but mostly I just ate a lot of sushi and just all the other things that you can't really do. At that time, I also kept busy in lockdown by doing loads of really fun photo shoots with corsets and other things that obviously I haven't seen the light of day in a very long time. And that for me was perfect. I needed distractions. I needed them. I also needed friends to sort of tell me if mutual friends maybe were pregnant that maybe I wasn't that close to, that I would probably found out on Instagram rather than from a text, you know, that sort of people on the outskirts of the group. or like, I remember when Ashley Graham got pregnant and my friend like texted me to be like, just before you see it on Instagram, you should know that Ashley Graham has just announced her pregnancy. And I was really grateful because I think if I'd have been scrolling and seen that, it might have knocked me, but hearing it from a friend was a bit nicer. So for me, that's kind of what worked. Like, unfortunately, with like infertility and trying to conceive and stuff, that there isn't a, like, you can't make it nice. There's a point where it just isn't nice. But I think your friends can do their best to kind of protect and comfort you. It's kind of like if his friend's gone through a bad breakup, they don't then want to be like hearing about another friend's really great relationship or like going to like 15 weddings in a week. It's it's just that level of sensitivity around like what people are going through. And also what I found didn't help for me was people going, oh, well, you can have mine. Oh, well, it's not what it's cracked up to be anyway. I'm like, well, let me find that out. Like, when people are like, oh, well, you wouldn't like it when they're waking you up at 2 a.m. I'm like, I would love to be waking up my baby at 2 a.m. You don't understand how much I want poo all over me and my living room. Like, I cannot tell you how much that would thrill me.
The milky vomit. Put the milky vomit all over me. I want it.
I want my nipples to be bleeding. Like, let's go.
I get you. You know, you've got such a huge online presence. Did you feel like, you know, that you had to be sensitive to your followers who were trying to conceive when you were sharing your pregnancy? Or do you think, you know, it should be celebrated?
Yeah, so I've the whole way through and even till now just said to people, please don't follow me if it's too much. Please mute me. Please make sure you're not following anyone who's too much. Don't hate follow anyone, but also don't follow anyone who, when you're looking at your phone, which should be a nice thing to look at, don't be like, oh, that post was a lot, because I've had to mute people and unfollow people throughout all of this. So I tried to announce with sensitivity. And when I felt like I'd done enough, sort of, this is what happened, I then sort of posted like any other pregnant person would. And I just did a whole load of posts. But I definitely was, I was thinking, how would I have liked someone to phrase their pregnancy announcement that I followed? And I also just wanted to acknowledge that it wasn't easy, that it was hard, what we went through. Because like some people, when they do IVF, they don't really let people know they've done IVF. But me, I'm like, yeah, this is my baby. And she was IVF. Like, I'm almost like, it's been so much to get to this point. Like, I almost want just everyone to know, like, yeah, she's IVF. Like, if I, every sweater she wears should say like IVF baby. But yeah, I just, for me, it's about how would I like to be treated? And that might not be the right way for some of my followers. They might have been like, we don't actually need you to talk about it being IVF. Like, an IVF person might be like, it would be nice if you just said it's a pregnancy, because that's what it is. But for me, it will always be about those needles. And we actually did a little photo shoot with her with the, all, they were all capped, they were all away from her, but with all the little needles just on a, like a little blanket next to her. Because like, she was grown in a lab and she's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Like, I'm going to celebrate what science did, because it did a bloody great job.
That's incredible. And also, I guess, well, I'll ask you the question. Do you talk about your IVF journey to highlight it and make it less of a subject that potentially could be, you know, maybe hidden in secrecy? You know, lots of people don't feel that they can talk about their IVF journeys, or they don't want to, they don't have the space, or they don't know how to. So are you trying to normalize it in a way?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's incredible like how many people need IVF and how it is becoming very common. I think fertility rates aren't as good. We're waiting longer to have babies. We're doing things to our bodies that might decrease fertility. So men, for example, with tight boxers and injecting steroids, or like a very drug heavy, drink heavy lifestyle, that can do so much to sperm count and mobility and stuff. And I think also back in the day, if a woman couldn't have kids, they kind of gave up. Whereas these days it's like, no, wait, there is something you can do. I would love to make it like less taboo, less kind of like shameful to talk about, to normalize like the journey, to normalize the fact that like it is like a valid option.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
And also, you know, not just for people who are trying to conceive, like I conceive naturally, I still want to hear about IVF. I still want to learn about it. I still want to know what people go through, purely out, you know, out of interest, but also so I can support people who might be going through it, so I can know to say the right things and I can avoid saying the wrong things. So I found it fascinating. I actually listened to you on another podcast talking about the 2 weeks after transfer that you ate Brazil nuts and all of these other things that I just had no idea. Can you just talk to us? Because I find this fascinating.
Oh, love a Brazil nut. Yeah, come on.
I do not. So we should begin to talk. So for my second round, I did acupuncture because that's like obviously it's holistic, so it's not for everyone. But I was just like, come on, let's do all of the things. Like, I need this one to work. I don't have it in me to go again, but I think we would have done a third round. But she recommended sort of a more like fermented food, making like roast chicken, like roasting a chicken, sorry, and boiling the bones down, making a broth, both of us drinking that. And then after you have your embryo transfer, you're meant to have McDonald's fries. It's like a IVF superstition. The sodium is meant to make it
delicious.
Stick. You're meant to eat pineapple core. So the pineapple core, which is like the nasty bit of the pineapple, there's a reason they come in rings. That bit is like all like woody and chewy. The amount, my tongue barely existed after the amount of pineapple I ate to try and make her stick. And then, yeah, 3 Brazil nuts a day that I was doing from the day of my eggs being out till she was about 6 weeks, because I was like, if I stop, she'll go. Like, well, I didn't know she was she then, but you know, if I stop doing it, the baby won't be there anymore. So I was eating Brazil nuts, I was eating sauerkraut, I was
You don't like Brazil nuts? Beer.
No. It's and also when you're eating 3 a day and you don't like them, you really don't like them. It's just
it's a hell of a lot of nuts to be consuming when you don't enjoy
them. Never want to see another Brazil nut.
No, but I'm very grateful to Brazil nuts for what they've done for me, you know, if that was the thing.
Were you anxious during your pregnancy?
Oh, like you can't believe. Yeah. So it's a weird thing, and I hope it makes sense to stay, but when you go through like not conceiving and like being like part of an infertile couple and every month you're just not pregnant, it becomes very familiar. So when you have the pregnancy happen, you're like one more step up that rickety ladder, just looking for the snake that's going to drag you back down. So even though you've got the thing you want, it's unfamiliar and you've gone a bit further up. So I actually, the first round, it only took for a few days and then I lost it. And it was almost not a relief, but it was almost like I'd been holding my breath until that happened because I was waiting for something to happen. Then when it did happen, it was almost like, well, I knew something would happen. I'm back to where I was. Okay, I know this space. But
yeah,
being pregnant, I was like, yeah, I was like, I don't know this. I don't know how to like cope, how to make the time pass, because it's not just me anymore, and it's not just like me going through the sadness and doing all the things. Like, I have to like keep this baby in there. She's fallen asleep now with my nipple just resting gently on her chin. I have to like keep her in there. I have to like our cat got hit by a car when I was literally weeks pregnant, literally just after the transfer. And that was like another thing that I was like, wow, okay, this is it. Like, it's gonna knock the embryo right out of me, the stress of this cat like going missing and then eventually like returning home with like broken hips. And like, it was just I was so anxious. And like, there was a milestones that I needed to hit where I'd heard of other people losing babies. Like, I read an interview with Laura Whitmore and I remember she lost a baby at about 8 weeks, and I was like, right, if I can get past 8 weeks, then I've got past that hurdle. Okay, then there's like the 12-week scan and then the 20-week scan and then 24 weeks you hit viability, and she was already moving by then, so I could feel her. And I'd hit that stage where if she was born, she would not be well, but she would potentially survive.
Yeah.
And then it was just scraping my way to every single milestone that was like, okay, we can do this, we've got this. Like, it seems like I might be having a baby, you know, like. And I flitted between like my 16-week scan where I found out I was having a girl and I bought like 800 dresses to like, I probably won't have a baby, like I'll probably need to look into doing another round, like let's plan the next round.
That's awful. What an awful place to be in, because you're constantly in flux, like not really allowing yourself to be okay with the pregnancy. And then know, the sort of the other side of that coin where you're just like probably saying to yourself, no, come on, you've got to try and keep in a positive frame of mind so that everything is okay. So I imagine that you just can't feel relaxed or balanced or happy throughout. That must
it's
be
like
really difficult.
Everything you wanted you have, you're pregnant, but equally you can't relax. I mean, they say, don't you, you know, the second you become pregnant, that's it, you never stop worrying again.
I guess that's
only heightened when you've been through a struggle to get to the pregnancy in the first place. I can't imagine how that must be.
George, don't you just spend your days, and well, to both Georges, I feel like parenting for me is like one big memory game of like, where are things? Firstly, like, have you seen my yellow toy that I had once at that fair back in 2019? You're like, I mean, what the fuck are you talking about? That's the first thing. Secondly, you're like always trying to manage a disaster. Like, you want them to go off and play and do stuff, but you don't want them balancing on a wall with one foot with a cliff below you. So you're like, oh, don't do that. Oh, no, have fun, but don't do that. It's like, it just never ends, the worry. No.
I think my biggest one at the moment is, oh, my goodness, she's making so much noise in her crib. Is she all right? And then she stops. I'm like, she's not making noise.
Making enough noise.
Like, come on, please, just keep doing that snuffly, weird, grunty thing that you were doing half an hour ago. Like, and that's like I imagine my quandary is obviously going to change when she's older, but it's that whole like, don't do this, but do this, but not so much. Like, she doesn't poo very much. She poos like once a week, which is amazing, but when she poos, so it's like, oh, this is amazing, but are you unwell? But oh my goodness, now you've done a massive poo, this is too much. But oh my goodness, you've gone back, it's been another 5 days without poo. Like, give me some poo. And
give me a poo, for goodness sake. Jordan,
come
I love
on.
A poo chat, by the
I
way.
I know, Joan, Jesus. That's another thing that you become obsessed with when you become poo. A parent. Pooing. What is that? What is that about?
I've been through my WhatsApp before and found photographs of poos that I've sent to Dozer, of not my own poos, of Luna and Kit's poos. And I was thinking, like, they used to be like the sexy photographs of me in the lingerie, and then there's just a turd that I've decided would be a good idea to send to Dozer. I'm never going to do that ever again. I wanted to talk to you about the birth. We wanted to chat to you about the birth. And because you're such an advocate online for body positivity and these amazing, I mean, I just love looking at your photos because I feel really empowered by looking at them. First your labour and then your postpartum body. How did you feel about that and where your head was at afterwards?
So I moved hospitals right at the end, like towards the end of my pregnancy, because I had a birth photographer and I wasn't allowed a second birth partner at my original hospital. So I moved to Royal Surrey, where firstly, birth photographer allowed. Secondly, 24-hour M&S and massive Costa. So honestly, we made
that's where Kit was born as well.
Yeah. Sorry. So St. Peter's was our other one, which is also an amazing hospital, but no 24-hour M&S. So sorry, guys. So I was told when I moved that because of my BMI, because I'm a bigger, heavier lady, that I would need to be induced between the 39-40 week mark, which I hadn't. That wasn't a rule at my last hospital, and I'm a big believer that, like, my pregnancy was, I was so lucky. I had such a great pregnancy. I felt fine physically. Her heart rate was fine. Like, everything, she turned when she was meant to. She was a good size. My placenta was in a good place. Like, every scan was absolutely, like, fine. But if, like, and I know that the risk thing is like, oh, your BMI is high and there's been like 3 cases where that's meant this, so we have to induce you. And it is, you kind of have to advocate for yourself. But I was also like very conscious, like, there is obviously a reason, and that made me a bit worried. I'm like, they wouldn't say it for no reason at all. So like, when I got to my 39th week, I was like, Robbie, we're going to do the things to go into labor. So I scrubbed the kitchen floor. I sniffed clary sage oil. I ate pineapple core. I drank raspberry leaf tea. And then we had a shag, which let me tell you, after all of these other things, I scrubbed the floor on my hands and knees. So I, doggy style, was just a little bit painful. But anyway, we did it. And genuinely, the next day I went into labor. And I'm not saying that that's gonna happen, but there is something.
It happened for me. I
Georgia,
think
you didn't have
happened.
Sex.
I did. Did you?
Yeah.
Three times. Conceiving Axel, conceiving Gigi, and then to get The labor going with Gigi. There we go. Three times. There's the three.
Well, there's the prostaglandin in the sperm, which is what they use synthetically to induce you. But I went into labor. I was like, this is great. I was hypnobirthing. I was on my ball. I had my TENS machine on. I was eating sea bass and steamed vegetables so that I had really nice food in my body. And potatoes. Really nice food in my body. I was like, this is great. That was one day. And then it went on and it went on, and we went to the hospital and I was 2 centimeters, and then she started ramming herself into my spine and I couldn't sleep and I was wailing like a newborn calf, and like Robbie couldn't sleep, and like I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. I have no energy. I don't know how I'm going to be able to give birth. I haven't eaten. I haven't slept. I mean, my body's like shaken from the pain. Went into the hospital, got given all the drugs, epidural. Yes.
Yes.
I then like got like put into all the positions on the birthing bar to have her, and she came out within an hour. The birth was amazing. The photographer was there. Like, I had the best experience giving birth to her. She was quite little, so she didn't cause too much damage, did you?
Do the photographers take photographs of everything?
You choose what you want, but I said yes.
Yeah.
So, I have seen it coming out.
Wow.
It might be a bit graphic, but there's a photo where she's literally just out, and I just say my fanny looks like a sock puppet because it's just all like sad and still a bit open. But like,
oh good god.
Sorry.
I'm not sure. I was just about to say,
I wish I'd done the same as you and had a photographer. And then you said that and I thought, now I know why. I didn't.
So those photos, and like there's ones where they're like pulling out the placenta and stuff, which is like fascinating. But the photos that I wanted and the photos that I'm so glad I got were like me meeting her for the first time, Robbie meeting her for the first time, like all of the emotion, like all of those box fresh photos of her. Like, I cannot tell you how pleased I am that I changed hospitals, that my photographer got there because I had such a long labor. So she had so much notice to get there, that they let her in, that I just had one midwife in there who was Lauren at Royal Surrey. You're a legend. Hmm. She was just the most calm, amazing midwife in the world. And I had such a nice recovery postpartum. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong, it's only recently that I've had to like stop gripping the toilet seat as I poo. And like weeing obviously was a bit fun to start with as well. But actually I've been really happy with like that I've been able to sort of pick her up and do things and drive and walk. My body doesn't look the same. I have had a little bit of a struggle recently looking in the mirror. I just feel like a bit of a melted candle at the moment. Like, obviously my boobs are like milky and like you know, your nipples have been half chewed off and my tummy's still a bit soft and a bit like droopy and stuff, and I've always been bigger and my body's always looked a little bit like a melted candle. But I do, it is that thing when you look at your husband who's like a bit more refreshed because they've got up and gone to work and haven't been with the baby all day, and they're sat with the baby and you're sat there like, oh, I still like don't feel quite like me anymore, but we both got the same outcome, but you didn't have to have your body go from like the thing that everyone thought was the most glorious, beautiful thing to, oh, have you snapped back yet? Like, oh, 10 ways that you can snap back. It's just, it is a bit, double standards.
The balance isn't quite right with that one. And actually you find the language coming quite a lot of time from women who are potentially writing these like salacious headlines in various different magazines and stuff, being like, oh, look at her bounce back body and look at how she snapped back post birth. And you're thinking, why as a woman would you write that about another woman? And I think it's really dangerous. I think the language really dangerous. I think it's really, really damaging for, you know, for the postpartum body, mind, soul, whatever.
Has anyone seen Selling Sunsets and Christine Quinn after she has the baby and she comes out in a crop top?
I've not watched it but I watched
it's actually season. Unbelievable. I mean, I didn't think I felt that self-conscious after I had a baby. I just sort of went with it and I didn't think I was affected by headlines. I knew it was silly, all of that kind of stuff, but when I saw that, I just couldn't help but think of every mum who was sitting watching that, who had given birth a few weeks before, probably hadn't even left the house yet.
Yeah.
And they have to watch that. So, yeah, I mean,
and she's celebrated and adored, and like it's like I feel like mums who show like the real reality, the stretch marks and stuff, that luckily these days does seem to be celebrated a bit more. But there's that sort of middle of the road mum who's a bit like, well, my body's sort of gone back and I didn't get too many stretch marks, but I still am a bit soft and poochy. And yeah, it does. With seeing that and how much it's like, wow, that is amazing. She is amazing. What an incredible person. Yeah. You're like, how
everyone
are you as
mum? Was saying
how
to her on there, like, wow, you look amazing. I can't believe you had a baby. You wouldn't have even known you had a baby a couple of weeks ago. And I'm thinking, how has this even got on TV? Yeah. How have they let this happen?
But isn't this just, is it not just her reality? Because I would never say to somebody that did just have a baby and then be able to get back into a crop top, I'll never say to them, like, how can you be flaunting that around?
No, it is her reality. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of women's reality. Yeah. It was the whole fact that there was such a big deal made out of the celebration of it. That was right. The bit that got me. It wasn't her, you know. So, you know, some people go out, like, after 2 days after they've had a baby and they're back in their clothes and that's fine, whatever. It was just the whole episode celebrating the fact that she looked so great. And it, I don't know, I just thought of all the women who were sitting watching that, maybe hadn't left the house for, you know, weeks on end.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, that just, I don't know, I just, that's what I couldn't get, was the whole celebration of it. Great, she looks brilliant, but actually, what does that mean? What does that even mean?
I can't understand how she hasn't trapped her long hair in a car door. You seen that whip? She comes out with that. That's going to get trapped in something that's going to slam. Front door, car door. That is quite, you thinking that too, George?
I can't wear my hair like not in a ponytail anymore. Like, and I put like a bit of makeup on the other day and I was scared that like she was going to look like an Oompa Loompa from like how much I smush her against my face. I'm not saying Christine doesn't smush her baby because I'm sure she does, but like I have to keep my hair away because otherwise when I put her on my shoulder, she's there like...
Yeah.
Like it's just, I don't know how, and like my false nails have had to go, like all of it. Like I had a wax the other week. That was interesting. Brought the baby in with me.
Yeah, she done this.
I mean... Yeah, she's seen that end before, hasn't she? But, you know, it was all like, this is my first time having a wax and my baby's like this old. And like, how do some women get straight back on it? Like, my baby's lying on the floor of the waxing salon, like just chewing on her hand. So, I mean, it is another reality. And I hate that we're presented with that. But also, I feel like we all like it and seek it out. There's a reason the Kardashians and Love Island is popular. We can't help but...
Yeah.
Sneak out that thing. I'm just really glad that with social media we have the exact opposite as well.
Yeah, and we have everything... both sides.
We're going to finish off with the best piece of advice that you have ever been given around being a new mum, or the piece of advice that you would give a new mum.
So the one thing that I massively struggled with was putting her down, because A, she's adorable, and B, after she's fed, she needs to be kept upright, of course, because you don't want the spew. And sometimes by the time you've kept her upright, she's ready for another feed, and you're stuck in this endless loop of like holding, feeding. And I would sit there thinking, I've put a wash on this morning and it's been 3 hours, and my husband would come home and I would cry, not because I needed him to take it out, because I wanted to take it out the washing machine. And when I lost it really badly one day, he literally held her, and for 10 minutes I had a poo, plucked my eyebrows, hung out the washing, like emptied the dishwasher. And then I was like, I feel so good now, because I was the one who needed to do that. Having said that, I also needed to hold her for me and for her. Like people say, they'll never be this small again. And it's not like you can slow down time, but I want to know that I always held her, that she always knew I was there. And luckily, a few days later, I had the health visitor around who was like, she's a really content baby, and she's really content because she knows she doesn't have to cry to get your attention, because you're already giving her a lot. Like, you can tell that she's chill. Like, and like, I am really lucky, she is just a chill baby anyway. But the best piece of advice is like, hold them as much as you want. Like, okay, you might get in your head with like wanting to do things around the house. There's nothing more frustrating than being 2 meters from like something that you're like, I just want to pick that up and put it in the bin, but I can't because the baby's asleep on me. She's now at the age where she does kind of sometimes not want to be held, and she likes to sit in her little donut on her own. And you can see that she's a bit like, okay, get off me, mum. But I'm so glad I held her as much as I did. I got those amazing snuggles, because she does still, obviously she's still tiny. I'm still going to get the snuggles for a long time. But I'm so glad I held her for as much as I did, and that I let things pile up and whatever else, because ultimately Robbie did come home and get to hold her. I needed to just be like, it's okay, Robbie will be home soon. So if I were to put that as a too long didn't read, like, hold them as much as you and they need. Like, you cannot overhold a baby. They're not manipulative. A baby doesn't cry because you've held them too much and they want to be held more. A baby cries because they want you to come and hold them. Like, it, as an adult, if I was upset and someone didn't comfort me, or I was hungry and I didn't get food, then I would be upset. And if I couldn't get a response to that, it would make me more upset. So I'm going to do the same for her. Like, when she wants to be held, I'll hold her.
I love that.
So, yeah.
I completely agree with you as well. And also, just so you know, my two are 5 and 3, and Isla, who's my stepdaughter, who's 8, and they still want cuddles all the time.
Yeah.
So I just think, like, cuddly parents, cuddly kids, like, it's so lovely. I'm never going to stop doing that.
Good.
I think it's really, really nice. And I just want to ask you about your products. Obviously, you are right in the mix of the newborn stage. So the products that you're absolutely living in and dying by at the moment.
So Metanium, like that old school yellow nappy cream, not only for her, but for me, I've put it on spots and it is a dream.
Love that.
A pram caddy, because I need to take my life out with me. And sometimes I forget, but in the pram caddy is like all the essentials for me and for her. We got painkillers, we've got face masks in there, but we've also got some extra nappy bags and bibs and stuff, and it's just easier than taking a whole bag out with me. My sensory box, now that she's a bit older, so I've got like feathers and light up things and rattly things and stuff like that for her. It tires her out, she loves it. I just feel like I'm on top of it being a mum when I get the sensory box out, because I'm like, yeah, that's right, I'm gonna sensory play with my child now.
I'm the mum that's got the sensory box. Okay.
Yeah I've got my okay I live together. In Surrey, I've got my sensory box, and I'm gonna go walking my wellies in a bit. And what my Calpol nose spray, because she was quite snuffly as a newborn, and it's just easier to jet that all the way up their nose. And then I couldn't like decide on the last thing. I've got little lights that I've got stuck everywhere around the house, so I don't have to put the big lights on, that you just tap and they come on. Those are great. And then my projector, my star projector, that was what saved me last night. And she slept for 8 hours solid last night, no wake up. It's called Mordig, the brand.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
That, or like the little Zed I've got, which you put in the cot with them and it kind of vibrates as if they're in a car.
Yeah.
That is the one. So those are like my live at the moment, my live and die by things that I'm like, yes, if I were to gift something to a friend who's having a baby, it would be one of those things.
Okay. So, yeah. I love that. Do you know what, to those listening who want to know the details of the products, and we'll put them in the show notes for you, and we'll also put them across our Instagram as well. George, it has been an absolute delight. I love how honest and real you are, and it's just been such a pleasure talking to you. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank
and
you very much.
We're going to leave you now, and you can just crack on with the boob.
Now she's like calm and like asleep on the nipple, of course. She just wanted to chat.
It's like a cozy place to be. Come and see us again soon.
Thank you so much for chatting with me.
I mean, where do you buy this sucky lube from? I'm fully invested in this. I mean, I don't know, I actually want to get pregnant, but I just never knew it existed.
I thought it's called special lube.
Well, I'm calling it sucky lube because it sucks up all the sperm.
Oh, good God, woman. Yeah, the special, I mean, I'd heard about the special lube before, but I think I didn't really know it's like magical qualities.
I had not heard of it.
No, I learned so much from this podcast.
Yeah, no, and you know, and we're laughing and we're joking, but obviously George has been on such a horrendous journey to getting pregnant. But I love that, you know, there was lots of light in that conversation as well, like around quite a serious topic, I guess.
Yeah, and I also really loved how she is able to kind of talk about the sort of, you know, the postpartum parts that actually she probably, you know, maybe didn't expect to happen. Like, she obviously touched on the fact that she had quite a tough time with her lows. And I think, you know, for somebody that had been on such a long journey to motherhood, you know, there might have been a tendency to just be like, oh, no, it's all fine, I've got my baby, and, you know, I finally got my baby and did it. But actually, she was still talking about the real stuff, still talking about the stuff that was going on with her.
Not sugarcoating it.
Yeah.
And you know what else as well? I think it's really brave when somebody is going through, you know, a fertility journey, and they say that even when their best friend, you know, finds out they're pregnant and announces they're pregnant, it hurts and it upsets them, because you know it's sort of instilled in us that we need to be happy for other people. You know, we've got to be happy for other people, and of course, you know, we are happy for other people, but if you're going through something like that, it can hurt. It would, it would hurt. It's natural for it to hurt. And I don't think that people should be ashamed of admitting that and protecting themselves, because obviously that's human nature. You know, it is going to hurt if you want something so badly and somebody else seems to have got it, you know, in an easy way or easier. Or I can imagine that you would feel quite bitter. And it's definitely, you know, I've spoken about how I got pregnant, and it wasn't always, you know, neither of them were planned. And I know how fortunate I am now that was the case. I know I need to be mindful of that when, you know, talking to friends, especially who might be going through fertility journeys that I don't know about.
And also when she said, when she was talking about, if you do know somebody that is going through fertility struggles and you are announcing your pregnancy, to send them a text.
Yes.
So that they've got the space to respond in their own time, rather than phoning them up or meeting up with them in person and telling them the news. I look back on the way that I told my sister, you know, in the middle of a Chinese restaurant. It's like, was that the right thing to do? I don't know.
Yeah, I know, but you don't know. That's the thing.
Could I have just sent my sister a text to tell her I was pregnant? Probably not, but I don't know. I've sort of thought about it a lot since the chat, and I've thought maybe that was a bit of a fuck up from me. It's all learning, and I'm really, really glad that we had the conversation with her. And she, thank you to George for being so honest and open about it.
Yeah.
And as always, we would absolutely love you to rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow as well. We are also very, very excited because we've been nominated for the best podcast in the Glow Mama Awards, which is very exciting.
You can vote if you head to the Glow Mama website. You vote for all the different categories, and we are there under best podcast, which we need to win. So please, we are begging. Please vote for us.
We would love you to.
And if you have got any suggestions, you know, guests you'd like to hear from this year, things you'd like to see us do on Instagram, please just drop us a DM. You know, these podcasts are for you. As much as we love doing them, you know, they're for you to listen to and enjoy. So any feedback, please drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMamas, and we will be back with another episode on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.